Chapter 1 Lakebriar slammed the axe down hard with one hand. The crack reverberated in his ears as the axe sunk deep into its target. He tugged downward on the handle. The axe did not budge. He inhaled deeply, as if trying to extract every molecule of oxygen from the bitter air. Within a fraction of a second, his body forced the air back out of his lungs. The warm exhaust crystallized before it left his mouth and lingered in front of his face, even as he gasped another stinging breath. He cocked his right foot back and kicked hard. It landed with a crunch. Another deep breath. The routine of exchanging one inadequate breath for another had increased in frequency since he started the 5-hour trek toward the summit of Lobuche East. Lake pulled his left foot free, bent his knee, and slammed the metal spikes of the crampon into the jagged ice 2 feet above his right. He transferred some of his weight to his left leg and pressed down, testing its stability. His foot shot downward as the brittle ice cracked and fell away. With his right foot firmly planted, and with aid from the ice axe that he clutched in his right hand, he kept his composure, never having to put tension on the fixed rope to which he was tethered. Faulty footing had become expected in these last few hundred feet of the climb, as a result of cycles of melting and refreezing. Small cavities, commonly called ice cups, riddled the side of the mountain. The frail ridges along the cracky surface proved less than reliable on more than one occasion, particularly in the last half dozen steps. He set his left crampon again and, this time, pushed and pulled his 6'3" frame a few feet closer toward his goal. At over 19,800 feet above sea level, the effect of oxygen in the air had dropped from 20.9% to a mere 9.9%. Every foot of progress up the 45-degree slope of the ice wall was labored, beautifully painful. As Blake dislodged his axe, reached up and buried it again, the icy surface appeared set ablaze in a blinding orange glow. The sun, just emerging over the tall peaks in the distance, quickly cast a blanket of light over the entire face of the mountain. Blake turned his head toward the sun, soaking in the immediate warmth it brought. Water droplets formed on the thin layer of ice encrusting Blake's unkempt beard, revealing hints of its natural red color through the silver frosting. For a second, a mere fraction of what would ultimately be a 2-week journey, Blake lost himself in the moment. The dull aching in his legs, caused by the buildup of lactic acid, seemed to melt just as the ice would surely do. He gazed at the gleaming disk cradled deep in the gap between Everest and Nuptse. The radiation burned through the wispy clouds ripping off of the highest peak on the planet. Whether there was something to be said about the Buddhists' and Hindus' beliefs in the sanctity of this place, or more likely, a product of mild hypoxia, Blake just may have, he thought to himself, found what he had come for. Had he needed to come within the shadow of the top of the world to find a moment of peace? To quiet his mind and forget, if only for an instant, the torment of regret, of grief? He could have lingered. He was sure he could live out his days in that spot. "We're so close! It's right there!" hollered Grayson Whitby. "Woo! I'm the king of the world!" Blake's mind was abruptly snapped back to reality as if he were awakened from sleep by a bucket of ice water. "Fool! Sure you are, Grayson. Just keep moving," Blake said, looking up the hindquarters of the pudgy man tethered to the fixed line directly above him. He immediately felt guilty about his dismissive tone, but his patience had been wearing thin with Grayson Whitby since they met at Everest Base Camp 2 nights prior, and he wasn't the only one. Whitby, a British airline executive based out of Hong Kong, had no business hiking Hyde Park, let alone the snowy peaks of the Himalayas. Blake wasn't climbing Everest, or even Amadablam. Why? He wanted to say to Whitby, because he knew his limitations, and that attempting such a feat without enough knowledge or experience could put everyone in extreme danger. That's why. But Whitby had paid his way, just like everyone else. And because trekking to Lobuche East required no technical climbing skills, there was nothing to say he couldn't join. In Blake's estimation, the endeavor required, at a minimum, some physical fortitude and a set of brass balls, neither of which Whitby seemed to possess.